Mutual presents, direct from London, a report by Arthur Mann, one of Mutual's American correspondents in Europe. We remind our listeners that European broadcasts are subject to censorship at the point of origin. We take you now to London.
Good evening, everybody. America has held the spotlight in Britain this week. Our reactions to the Axis Pact with Japan and to the British decision to reopen the Burma Road to China. You may remember my telling you some weeks ago that the Burma Road would never have been closed had the American battle fleet been based on Singapore. In view of that fact, there is much speculation here now regarding the possibility of an Anglo-American understanding about the future movements of the American Pacific Fleet in the event of offensive Japanese action because of this decision. The resumption of American negotiations with Russia in both Washington and Moscow has also excited those here who still have hopes of detaching Moscow from Berlin and turning Russia toward a policy of at least benevolent neutrality in regard to Great Britain. However, some objective British observers, who are by no means anti-Soviet, have expressed to me their complete disbelief in any such aim being achieved. They think that the Soviet government is far too afraid of Germany's own might to risk a conflict with Hitler, especially since the pact with Japan. They believe that Russia will follow her own policy of appeasement, even if necessary to the extent of slowing up on aid to China in order to avoid war. Incidentally, the American election campaign has developed little interest here so far. Rightly or wrongly, those I have talked with in London believe that the outcome will not affect our foreign policy with respect to the war, and that this policy will be determined not by domestic political controversy, but by the belligerent developments in Europe, the Near East, and the Pacific. Finally, America made the front page here this week when the Air Ministry announced the formation of the Eagle Squadron, a fighter plane formation in which all the pilots are American. They wear the regulation light blue Royal Air Force uniform, but on each arm, just below the shoulder, are the white initials ES, Eagle Squadron, and beneath a white American eagle, a design specially approved by King George. 34 Americans, some of whom have already fought in France or here with the RAF, have so far joined, and it is hoped that eventually there will be enough American volunteers to form a group of Eagle Squadrons. This first unit is still in training before taking up combat work. Aside from the United States, the great interest here now is centered on the Balkans and the Near East, two spheres which are closely connected in the military sense. Once again, Hitler has stolen a march on Great Britain by his partial and peaceful occupation of Romania. Once again, Britain has been too late. Despite official silence, the feeling grows here that a diplomatic breach with Romania is not far off, and there are murmurs as to why Romania's oil wells weren't blown up 2 weeks ago in order to cut off their vital supply to Germany. The Danube is now a German river. The Nazis are on the Black Sea. Greek independence and neutrality is menaced, and Yugoslavia has been isolated. The forces of Hitler draw nearer to Turkey. Whether the latter will make a fight if attacked depends upon the attitude of Russia. And to revert to what I said before, her support is doubtful. Thus, Germany appears to be working around by the back door to the aid of her Italian ally in the Near East. It looks as though any German plan of invading Britain is off for the time being, and that the desert sands of Egypt will be the scene of land operations this coming winter and spring. So much for the scene abroad. On the home front, the nightly and daily air raids have now become a matter of mere unpleasant routine. Daytime raid warnings are becoming more frequent as clouds afford the German pilots cover from the British fighter planes and anti-aircraft gunfire. German planes penetrated over the heart of London one morning this week, and bombs fell in a number of places in the center of the town. During a recent raid, one bomb pierced the roof of St. Paul's Cathedral and destroyed the high altar. But the main fabric of the structure was not damaged and no one was injured. The night raids continue with the same regularity, but now that the days grow shorter, we live in a period of warning which lasts nearly 12 hours between dusk and daylight. Now, instead of having a total raid period of some 10 hours a day, as I reported a couple of weeks ago, the time has jumped up to about 15 hours a day. You meet scarcely anyone nowadays who hasn't had at least one narrow escape from high explosive incendiary or delayed action bombs. Some comfort came, however, from the casualty figures which Prime Minister Winston Churchill announced this week. Deaths and serious injuries decreased from 6,000 in the first week of the air blitzkrieg on London to 3,000 in the fourth week. Nevertheless, up to last Saturday, there have been a tragic total of 8,500 persons killed and 13,000 seriously injured. Another brighter side of the air warfare is that shown by a comparison of German and British losses. It is unofficially estimated that by the end of last month, Germany had lost 6,500 warplanes in combat and the British only 1,417. In flying personnel, the German loss is put at 13,500 men, about seven times the British casualty figure. Then, too, the percentage of German planes destroyed during night raids by anti-aircraft gunfire seems to be progressively on the increase. Of the 64 German planes brought down in night raids since June 18, 30 were shot down by British fighter machines, 30 by anti-aircraft fire, and 4 were smashed up against barrage balloon cables. However, out of the first 22 night raiders brought down, only 2 were caught by AA guns. But out of the next 9, the guns got 4. Out of the next 21, the guns got 15. And out of the next 12, the guns got 9. The London refugee situation is better, too. Well, London has her refugees like any other war-torn country, the thousands who have been bombed or burned out of their homes. The number of these homeless has been reduced from 25,500 at the peak period of about 10 days ago to about 10,000 this week. And food and rest centers for these homeless are being improved and expanded. British labor came well into the domestic picture this week with the annual conference of the Trade Union Congress, the equivalent of the annual convention of the American Federation of Labor. Though labor is now in the British government, and open party politics is in abeyance for the time being, my labor and trade union friends tell me that their party has not for a moment forgotten or watered down its demands for a new social order. A sharp and sensational reminder of this was given yesterday by Ernest Bevin, Minister of Labor and National Service, and a new member of the War Cabinet, saying that for the first time, a very close liaison had been established between the Ministry of Labor and the Foreign Office. He told the conference, "Its object is to get the diplomatic service in the future to move and have its being in a new environment and to recognize that the limited court circular society of the chancelleries will never return. But if there is to be a reconstructed world, it must be brought about by the harnessing, utilizing, and catering for the rising masses of labor to whom the future really belongs and who must be the dominant factor in the new democratic world. To this end, there must be a broadening of the right of entry into the diplomatic service. If a boy of a secondary school can stay within a spitfire, the same brain can be turned on to produce a new world." That was Bevin's revolutionary proposal regarding a service which is still recruited almost entirely from the socially elite and the wealthy classes of Great Britain. But America is soon going to hear something at first hand about British labor from Sir Walter Citrine, General Secretary of the Trades Union Congress, who will attend the annual conference of the AFL as a fraternal delegate from this country. While in the United States, he will also contact European refugee trade union organizations to arrange for coordinated action on various international labor problems, both during and after the war. Thank you, and good night.